This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
It's very simple here today. We're going to talk tariffs. We're going to talk tariffs and ask the question, are they terrific or are they terrifying? Maybe they're both. Are we winning or losing? We want to talk about all of that here on Viewpoint today. But in order to get to that, I want to share with you an article that came out from Patrice Lewis. It came out on WorldNet Daily. I want to share some excerpts from this because actually it was the result of the work of someone else who went out and did some interviews. You might be interested in what they had to say concerning why Trump voters aren't abandoning him over tariffs. I've seen a lot of panic, fretting, and dire predictions concerning Trump's tariffs, particularly with regard to Chinese imports. Faced with shortages, price increases, and hardship from the tariffs, the media and leftist politicians fully expected the American people to rise up in fury and turn on the president they elected. They cited endless, carefully curated polls as proof of this assumption. Then, one conservative columnist named David Marcus decided to do something. He actually talked to the working men and women of America to learn their views on Trump's tariffs. Some of the people potentially most heavily impacted by these tariffs. Democrats and even some Republicans have cited polls that show Americans think that this policy will hurt them economically, and so surely they must be souring on their vote for Mr. Trump. The past few days, he said, I have traveled around West Virginia, Indiana, and Kentucky, and I could not find a single Trump voter who regretted their choice over tariffs, not one. What he found is a stubborn, resilient population willing to bear the brunt of the upfront pain of the tariffs it meant for long-term benefits. One couple said, we need change, and that can hurt at first. Trump needs time to make that change. Well, this attitude is apparently baffling the elites who expected Middle America, to crumple up and beg the left to save them. Pollster Frank Luntz expressed his surprise this way. I've never seen this before because usually when you're hurt economically, that changes your perspective and your politics. But not with these people. They're staying firm. And here's what's eluding the mainstream media, academia, politicians, and other ivory tower elites. Trump voters, which constitute nearly all small town and rural areas of the nation, are fed up with the status quo. Attitude is widespread and not restricted to a few outliers either. Trump supporters are not going to run to the hills because the stock market gets bouncy or because Barbie dolls get a few bucks more pricier. It may be remarkable that despite the entirety of the liberal media and even a decent chunk of the conservative media railing against tariffs, Trump's voters still trust him on the issue, but it should not come as a surprise, he writes. Despite the struggles, despite the uncertainty, it seems working-class Trump voters still feel hopefully that things will work out to America's benefit in the end. Do these working Americans know that Trump's policies might fail? Asked Marcus. Well, sure, they're not stupid. They get the risk, but they didn't vote to spruce up the status quo. They voted to destroy it. And that's why some economic discomfort will not scare them away from Donald Trump. Yet concerns linger. China is in a world of hurt at the moment from the tariffs, with some predicting the nation will plunge into a full-fledged economic depression. Beijing will have trouble backing down from its standoff with the United States because China and Chinese Communist Party leader Xi Jinping has clearly created his whole persona around being the leader who can stand up to America. And it's uncertainty over Xi's reaction that has people most concerned because he wields, or at least thinks he wields, an iron grip over his people. So still the jury is out. Out with regard to the tariff fallout, supporters are willing to give Trump the benefit of the doubt. At least the man is doing something to correct the decades-long drift away from American manufacturing, and it remains to be seen whether the long-term gain will justify short-term pain. I thought it was a fascinating article, and joining us here today on Viewpoint, Christian Briggs, who is a veteran with regard to the issues of money and economics and gold and silver and all of this, and has recently come from the White House where he had a conference there concerning these matters. He's joining us here on Viewpoint today. Christian, it's good to have you in the program.
Well, sure. Thanks for having me. And just to kind of correct a little bit, wasn't at the White House, but we're certainly advising people in Congress to be able to give the administration at the White House some really much-needed kind of expansion of what we already knew, was that China is really coming hard at us, and these tariffs are turning out to be a lot more of a quagmire than I think everybody thought.
Well, I appreciate your making that correction, because the devil's always in the details, and so is the truth, and now you're living up to your first name, Christian, because you're actually telling the truth. I appreciate that.
You bet. Well, the thing about it is what Trump's realizing from his first term to a second term, China's had a lot of room to expand. And this BRICS nations, which is a coalition of about 20, 21 countries from members and partners, they've advanced much further than what people thought. And in fact, I think that once the Secretary of Treasury, Scott Bessent, got in there, he realized that China had made inroads that were not possible had Trump been in their second term. And he certainly, he being Xi Jinping, took full advantage of Biden's dementia and pretty much like a walking brain donor syndrome to be able to expand all over the world. And they did. I mean, they did. I mean, what are you hearing from your people? It's the same kind of thing.
Well, Christian, what baffles me, and I agree with you, this is not just historic with regard to the rapid development of these BRICS nations, but also, I think it may actually be prophetic. It may be setting the stage for events that the Bible foretells, where various coalitions of nations gather together and create the situation, the tensions that arise in some of the very serious conflicts that are recorded in the Scripture. So these BRICS nations, it's amazing how the attack, Russia's attack on Ukraine, led to the United States and Europe rejecting Russia outright, which drove Russia into the arms of China, China and Russia becoming best friends when otherwise they didn't have much care for that one another, and then through that develop all of these other nations as a coalition. It's just shocking, isn't it?
It's overwhelming. In fact, when you think about it, think about this for one second when you're doing the analysis. What happened was when Russia invaded Ukraine, which was a huge mistake for us to put those kind of sanctions, you were perfectly accurate in your description. Is Russia basically said, we're already part of the BRICS members. Why don't we expand our relationship, tighten it up? In fact, why don't we go for what could be considered global dominance in the financial arena, in which they did. They did that. See, when we sanctioned Russia to that level of hurting them, Russia was the comment that Putin made, which is a very interesting one. He did it fairly quickly after the Ukrainian invasion, where Biden put all the sanctions and the UN got together. He said, you have to understand Russia, and this is similar to what Xi Jinping said. For hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, we've been fighting a war that we've always known was going to end up at this point. And for 25 years, the U.S. has put these dollar sanctions on us, which we learned to live with and work around.
All right, we'll pick up with that after this break. Stay in there, Christian. We've got to get a handle on this.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint, my friends. Again, we're talking tariffs here today on Viewpoint. Are they terrific or terrifying? Are we winning or losing? Well, your viewpoint on these things might determine destiny. And in fact, we opened the program with an article setting forth the viewpoints, the attitudes of the majority of those who voted for Mr. Trump for this second term. But you see, when we talk tariffs, we can't just talk about them in the abstract. We have to talk about them in the greater picture, the greater economic and geopolitical picture of that which is taking place in our world. And that's what we're discussing here with our special guest, Christian Briggs, concerning even the BRICS nations that have developed out of Russia's attack on Ukraine, the West's opposition to Russia through massive sanctions that actually drove Russia into the arms of China and created a whole new economic environment for both Russia and China, and then these other 20-plus nations now that have become part of the BRICS nation. So we had to interrupt you at the break. Do you remember, Christian, what was on your mind at that point?
Absolutely. And it goes right back to the heart of what the American financial system is based on, is a dollar. Any government, any society, the currency is the sovereignty value of a nation. If the currency is regarded in high standards and as credibility in usage, it has what they call a strong economic policy. But when the dollar is weaponized to a point where individuals like, it's not just Russia. I wish we could isolate it to just one or two countries. We've been doing the sanctions game for 40, 50, 60 years,
uh-huh.
Where we've basically taken away the usage of the dollar from a certain country or principality. There's a lot of different ways of saying it, but certainly we've weaponized it to the point where people are just saying, okay, these are the circumstances sometimes that evolve. We're not going to use the dollar anymore. We don't have to. We can circumvent that, and that way these sanctions have no value. They have no meaning. They have no purpose because they don't do anything.
Uh-huh.
Ukraine, the only reason why Russia invaded Ukraine was to protect the borders of Russia. It wasn't a proactive measure based on aggression to own and control. It was a reactionary measure against NATO's encroachment that had been going on for over 35, 40 years.
Which actually had been amplified with great focus in 2014 with very specific warnings. Don't do this or you'll regret it.
Correct. Well, the CIA took out the leader that was democratically voted for, that actually Russia had been very happy to work with. They knew that particular individual who had run and been successful in getting to be president of Ukraine would be a person who would regard NATO as not something that they could be a part of in order to maintain Russia's sovereignty. And the treaties and the agreements that were signed in 2014, there were some signed in the 1990s, all were violated against Russia. And I'm not saying this is pro-Russia, but what I am saying is that Putin has every right in order to maintain his safety of his people, he will do whatever. He's a very, very, I'll call it a person of which they has such high love and regard for his people. He puts them, believe it or not, and people will find this sometimes kind of interesting, he really has a very strong sensibility and a feeling of safety. He's kind of like their leader, like their protector, uh-huh. And he takes that very seriously. And when people realize that that is the kind of individual he is, then you understand the reasoning why he did. And then I've had...
All right, so which is very much like what Donald Trump now has done with regard to this country.
Well, 100%. Donald J. Trump, the man, loves this country. There's no question. He loves this country. And anybody who resides in this country, he loves you just as much. He just doesn't like illegal immigration. That's the only thing he says. He loves it. He loves immigrants.
Right.
Just come through the front door. Don't come through the back door.
Exactly. Please. Okay, now... We've laid this big foundation. Now, a lot of people might say, well, what in the world does this have to do with tariffs? You said we're going to talk tariffs. Can you, in just a few sentences, create the link now that ties these things together so that we can talk more specifically about the tariffs?
Well, it's a lot of groundwork, but then this ground is shifting. It's not an earthquake of 9.0 magnitude, but it is definitely a shifting.
Like a series of 5 to 6 pointers.
Yeah, and then sometimes those shift left, sometimes they shift right, and sometimes they just drop straight down underneath you, and you're kind of like,
right.
you're trying to grapple for some stability. And Trump's learning as he goes. He has to look at this in a different light. Certainly I would. I'll give you what I would do, and I think this is going to kind of reside a little bit about what's happening. You got to remember is that in 89 years, how far China has come in so many ways, from de-dollarization almost to the point where manufacturing, consumption, their whole economy now is less to do with America and more to do with 100 nations out there.
Well, that's what was launched, in effect, by Richard Nixon. Back in, what was it, about 1972? Not only did he take us off the dollar as a standard, but he is the one who orchestrated the admission of China into the World Trade Organization, and through that, everything else has changed.
Yes, absolutely, positively. Well said. When we were at the gold standard and the dollar wasn't pegged to gold, that was the beginning of the end of the dollar. And if you look at two things that emerged from that, the World Economic Forum grew. It started in 71, okay,
right,
knowing what was coming. And two, China made massive amounts of aggression to get into the World Trade Organization, which we let them in. Then they knew at that point they could then take their trade, which is manufacturing, to a level to where everybody would use it, and then utilize those resources that they received from all these countries who are interested in low-cost manufacturing, take those monies that they were making and reapply those to dominate the world in various measures. One was securing rare earth minerals, okay, rare earth minerals that they knew will always have a place within all manufacturing. But number two, they knew that as sophistication of technology was to move forward, then they would be on the forefront of various minerals, or certainly commodities that are used exclusively within those ecosystems, and they wanted to control the flow of those natural resources. By controlling it, they were able to profit from it. They actually owned a lot of it.
Yeah.
When you look at today, China controls 25% to 30% globally, and in some cases, some very strategic minerals, some mill elements, and more importantly, commodities. And banking as well.
And this is the reason why they done everything they could to seduce African nations and their leaders to jump on the Chinese bandwagon and basically sell their sovereignty for Chinese dollars and production. And just like America did, we sold our sovereignty over time after Nixon and then Bill Clinton in 1993, sold America's heart and sovereignty in effect for Chinese cheap labor and products. And so now they've got us over a barrel, and no wonder then there's such stubbornness and resistance to Mr. Trump's effort to rectify the situation economically through tariffs. What more do you have to say on that vent, on that situation?
Well, that's what you have to look at. That's the 800-pound gorilla in the room, is that China knows that they've diversified their manufacturing, they've diversified their entire ecosystem through massive amounts of infrastructure investment where they control a lot of these countries. The tariffs themselves, and let's pick it apart a little bit.
Right.
The tariffs that are being done, in some cases, are surgical. Some cases, they're grenade. In other words, a grenade can be thrown over there. Casualties will be met. But it was a predetermined risk management grenade. Over here, the surgical ones are the ones you're fine-tuning to be able to hone in on the biggest portion, which really, it's all about China. It's all about China and the BRICS in order to be able to get stability within the dollar. And really, people are a little bit fearful right now of this debt, the deficit spending. Even Scott DeSantis said in the last couple of weeks, as of course Fed Jerome Powell has said many, many times for a number of years, this is not sustainable. And what they're trying to say is we have to get a revenues in other words, more money coming into the accounts of the United States.
Right.
We have to lower taxes to increase GDP productivity. But in doing so, you risk a couple different things, and that's inflation. So the tariffs have to be very careful, because anytime, I'll give you an example. A dear friend of mine yesterday called me, and him and his wife were getting a deck of cards to play Mahjong. It's a Chinese game of some sort.
Okay.
And he said when they went to go buy this Mahjong cards or board, whatever it was, or these little things, they were $49 about 3 months ago. I thought, okay, they're $159 now because they're made in China. There's your tariff.
Okay, but yeah. Who needs that?
Well, not him. He didn't buy them. He said he wasn't going to do it because he was so mad at having to pay the extra money. He was pissed off.
Well, what was it, 145% tariffs or something like that?
Yeah,
it's yeah. pretty severe. On the other hand, it's being used, using a different analogy, it's an arm-twisting analogy. If you bring bring the country to a place where economically it can cry uncle, then you have something going for you. Now you can step back and say, okay, you cried uncle, you want that again, or can we work together?
China is not wanting to work with the U.S.
No.
China wants to exploit the U.S. Remember that.
Well, actually, Xi Jinping has declared, as has all China, that they will rule the world by 2050. That's exactly what they declared.
Yes, 100%. They're convinced they can do it. And I'm not so sure that a portion of what he's saying may not be quite accurate, but he's not far off the mark in their attempt. And ruling the world is not just from a military standpoint. They don't see it quite like that. They're looking at the financial markets in a financial sense to rule the world.
Uh-huh.
Now, could he do it by 2050? Would he be able to do it at all? That's the real question. Let me state this. What China has accomplished in less than 60 years from when literally it's been about 56 years or
right.
so, 54 years,
it's breathtaking.
Because it was, early 71 when Nixon went to China and he made that first trip, first president to ever visit China. And he sat down with the party leaders, including Mao, who was the premier at the time, where Richard Nixon was saying good things about China. The whole time that he was there, China knew if we can convince this guy we're good people, we're going to run the world. We're going to own it. All we need is for us to get into the WTO, then that's the first crack. And they did that. The question you have to ask yourself, can China maintain the consistency of expansion, dollar decentralization, and more importantly, can they maneuver their banking system to be able to utilize workarounds, the SWIFT? All of those so far are yes. They've done and accomplished everything I just said. They've accomplished. Not to the measure to run the whole show, but I can tell you this. They now have a seat at the table, and that table is very limited. It's a G7 table. They are now, when you consider China and the BRICS nations, and I always tell people you should look up the BRICS, when you look at them as a coalition, a unity of one, they are now bigger, substantially bigger than the United States, and they're even bigger than the G7 in both terms of GDP.
All right, so what this has done... What this has done, it seems, is set up the BRICS nations under the control of Russia, China, and other nations that felt like they were left out of the prosperity and policies being set up by the Western One World Order. Now, they are the premier competitors that have come about in just a matter of a handful of years to be the massive competitors against the West in a one world order that even the World Trade Organization, not World Trade, but Klaus Schwab in the World Economic Forum has been setting up. So what we're looking at, it seems to me, is the movement, the geopolitical and economic movement of nations to set up the final opposition powers that the scriptures portray as existing just before the second coming of Jesus Christ. That puts a bigger picture on it. We'll go back now to why these tariffs may or may not be important, not just with China, but with other nations. Stay tuned, my friends. You're listening to Viewpoint. We'll be right back. Our guest, Christian Briggs.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Again, it's always a delight to join you here on Viewpoint as we talk about the deepest issues that touch our hearts and our homes. Today, we're talking about this matter of tariffs that seems to be on so many people's minds and hearts, don't know what to do with it, don't know how to understand it. And our guest today, Christian Briggs, with I Think You Can See, has a tremendous insights economically and so on, what's going on with over 40 years of experience in hard assets from precious metal to rare art and coins. He deals with these things, and he is the CEO of Hard Asset Management Group, and you actually have a show called Hard Asset Money Show, don't you?
Yeah, we do. It's a Hard Asset Money Show, and we're 3 days a week. We've been doing pretty well and had it for about 4 years now.
Uh-huh. How do people connect with that? Is it a video? Is it radio? What is it?
No, Hard Asset Money Show is on YouTube for video, and then Spotify and Apple podcasts under the Hard Asset Money Show.
Okay. Now, you also have a website that can be connected with. My understanding is it's bmcham.com. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. It sure is. bmcham.com. Correct.
bmcham.com. And what will people find when they go there?
They'll be able to find, we sell precious metals, we sell select rare gold coins and things like that. They can see our inventory, and of course they can always call us to get quotes on any kind of a precious metals product.
Uh-huh. How did you get into that?
Oh, I started as a kid, teenager.
Working
in various shops. Yeah, just kind of evolved from a teenage fascination and passion to a full-time job.
And actually led you to some level of renown so that you could speak with some authority there in Washington.
Yes, there's certain people in D.C. that look to me to kind of give them some guidance on some of the various policies, and I try to inform them what I think might be a direction or certainly different caveats within the various ways the administration, both past and current and probably in the future, would look at things. Not everything is so black and white, and when you're dealing in politics, I think the color gray is more present these days than black or white.
You're right. Sometimes it's more white than black. Sometimes it's gray. It continues to evolve, and that's the way people are. Politics is just the result of the way people think and live. So when we talk now about these tariffs, we've been talking about China, and there are three primarily two things related to China and the tariffs. One is national security in a broader sense. Another is the fentanyl pipeline. But the third one would be reliance on foreign supply chains. It seems to me that these are pretty big deals.
Well, they're huge. At the end of the day, what people need to appreciate is other cultures, other societies, other governments, and, mm-hmm. and the way they work.
Right.
China was never going to allow itself to be looked upon as a second-class citizen. Various countries around the world were so tired of the United States involved in their politics, from the CIA doing, I think it was 39 or 40 direct overthrows of governments the CIA was actually involved with directly under the authority of the president or anybody involved the last 50, 60, 70 years. It's not in yesterday or last week, but it's been over since World War II when the whole CIA was formed in such a way was to monitor government and to make sure that foreign governments aren't doing anything that would jeopardize our national security, our sovereignty. Uh-huh. But they also decided at that point they were going to become the procurers of government politics in the sense that they would decide who was going to be in charge of a government. And sometimes it was right because we didn't want communism to flourish globally. Uh-huh. The Soviets had a mindset that they were going to globalize communism, and the CIA had to get involved in various ways to overthrow a lot of the expansion of communism in both Latin America, South America, even Western Europe was heading that direction from Eastern Europe. So it wasn't all bad. It was actually great that they did these things. It was very beneficial to the sovereignty and the national security of the United States. So it's not all bad. The question now is, but we've done it enough to where governments have now become immune to it, and they've learned to live without it or with it, and it doesn't affect their bottom line. Thus, the BRICS nations, which is, you know, China being the lead partner, and they've learned to circumvent the sanctions, and now we're starting to see that these tariffs, we are starting to walk back a few of the tariffs, not in a bad way, but in a methodical way. And Trump, who's a natural-born leader, has been able to mitigate any risk to the economy as best he can. There's going to be risk is basically the short-term pain to get the long-term gain. So he's mitigating that very surgically, and he's doing the very, very best he can, given the fact that Sleepy Joe Biden, who's, you know, again, the first walking brain donor that's ever been known to exist, maybe more, but we sure know he was. He being Biden, handed Trump an economy that was not what it was. They lied about the jobs numbers. That's number one. The full-time jobs that were in the last 3.5, almost 4 years under Joe Biden, those were government jobs, full-time jobs. They lied about the numbers, almost to the tune of 1 million jobs were not created. The underlying economy was not doing great. They had contraction in the first two quarters of 22, so we were in a recession, but they overstimulated the economy and they pumped it up through various legislative bills that made it look like everything was good. And here comes Trump being handed a bankruptcy in all intents and purposes. If you can't pay your bills without borrowing money, you're technically bankrupt. You don't have assets that exceed your debt. So this poor guy was walking into a quagmire of economic uncertainty, realized it's not good. On top of that, we're bleeding $1.5 plus trillion a year in trade deficit. The fact that he's still sitting there as commander-in-chief and he hasn't pulled his hair out, which, by the way, I believe that's all his hair for the record. I think that's actually all his hair. That is amazing in its own sense.
Well, it
is. It is. He's as tough as nails.
He is tough as nails, but he also has an ability to pierce through the din, that which seems so foggy and confusing to the majority of people, even smart people, and to go right through to the heart of the matter and see what needs to be done and then be willing to do it. And it's a very, very unusual gifting. But let's talk about, this is something that I think people don't quite understand, because they see him coming through with, okay, we're going to level a 25% tariff on everybody, or we're going to levy a 145% tariff on China. Okay, what is he doing? Is he actually believing that he's going to get and resolve a 25% tariff on all these countries, or 145% on China? I don't think so. Let me give you an idea. I practiced law as a trial lawyer for 20 years, there in California. You're in California, aren't you?
Right now I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, you're in Nashville, Tennessee. Oh, okay.
I go between Tennessee and Puerto Rico, where I'm a resident.
Okay. All right. My bad. But in any event, I practiced law there as a trial lawyer and handled many, many civil cases, lawsuits. In the process of doing a lawsuit, you make a demand, a settlement demand. Usually there's an insurance company behind the defendant, and So you make a demand, and normally, usually, they reject it. Okay? Were you wrong in making a demand? No, not necessarily. Were they right in rejecting it? No, not necessarily. But what it did was set up the parameter for discussion. That's what the demand did. And so you go back and forth. And in California, a civil case could last four years. You're not going to resolve that in a year or two. So the closer you get to trial, the closer you get to the pressure that creates the willingness on either or both parties to, well, shall we say, soften their positions and enter into a settlement. Very, very few cases ever really go to trial. That's the process. And that's exactly what Donald Trump has been doing. He has set the demand. Then he did that to set up the pattern of negotiation so that the framework could be established and they could talk. And that's why 100 countries have come to him and said, let's talk now. Do you think I got it right?
You did get it right. You did get it right. The question is that you have to remember is, will these countries abide by the tariffs that we all agree to? China has broken, right? Think about this for a second. It sure sounds good on paper, but do you realize that every single time China's agreed to do something, they lied? Every time.
Well,
every single time.
That is a pattern of human nature, and if it's all about power and not about purity, if you don't honor love and honor truth, but you only love and honor power, perks, and position, then that's what happens.
Right. That's right.
So
that's exactly right.
All right. So where do we go from here? Are the tariffs terrific or terrifying or both? Are we winning or losing?
We're winning in some fronts, and we're not losing in others. We're just kind of in a holding pattern until we can see what some of these countries are going to come back to us with.
Okay, so in other words, the case is moving toward trial. The test is coming on. The pressure is increasing, and somebody is going to break and say, okay, here's what we're willing to do.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what it is. The trial is starting to get closer to the trial start date. The problem is the plaintiffs and the defendants are still yet to have a mediation to realize that nobody wants a trial. Mediation is the best way of solving indifferences. The problem is...
You must have been in some lawsuits, my friend.
No. I just read law books. I love reading law books as much as I love reading economics. And
all right, we'll go into this right after the break, because what we're about to do is enter into a settlement conference with the supervising judge of tariffs, whoever that might be, and see what could be done. We'll talk about that when we get back. Christian Briggs is our special guest today, an economist, and... you're going to want to go to his website, I'm sure. We'll get to you after this.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
We're talking tariffs here today on Viewpoint. Terrific or terrifying, what are they? Are we winning or losing? Our special guest, Christian Briggs, an economist. And I think you can see that he has a handle on what's going on out there better than the average person. So, Christian, we're heading rapidly toward a settlement conference somewhere, whoever's going to be the mediator. In the case of a civil case, for instance, in the areas in which I practice in California, you would have to meet with a judge just before trial. It would be a pre-trial conference. And the purpose for the pre-trial conference was for the judge to listen to both parties in chambers and see what their viewpoints were, try to figure out where their tough points were, where their soft points were, where the arguments were the strongest, and so on, and then attempt to help the parties come to a place of resolution. Now, we don't necessarily have a judge to do that here with regard to the tariffs, but the nations and their representatives themselves become those judges. And so we're moving in that direction, and we see over 100 nations that have at least come to the table and said, okay, we see that we have been in the wrong in many ways, that you've got us over the barrel. All right, what can we do? So what do we do now?
Well, remember, China thinks that they actually own the courtroom. As they're moving forward with a situation of he said, he said, because remember this, China's always said, we've always maintained the consistency of the regulatory environment with the World Trade Organization. We've always adhered to the rules. Mm. They lie. And the U.S. has caught them on multiple occasions for 50 years, multiple occasions from IP theft, which has been some of the most horrific,
right,
costly mistakes we've ever made. That just we should have gotten more aggressive. The problem is that the dependency that we have on China is far greater at the time, until about this point, than it's ever been. So we've learned to detach ourselves somewhat from China, but not enough to where we can sanction China. Have you ever noticed that? We haven't sanctioned China.
Isn't that interesting? So in other words, if China's making the majority of our drugs and pharmaceuticals, where's our power? Where's our leverage? If China is making the majority of this, that, or the other that we depend upon, even our appliances and so on, where's our leverage? We have given up gradually our leverage in pursuit of cheap products, and in that regard, have actually gradually given up even our sovereignty, have we not?
Correct. We have never sanctioned China to the levels of Iran, Iraq, or Russia, or Venezuela, or North Korea, or Cuba. Never. We've never done it to that level. The sanctions we may have done, and I'm not even sure we actually did any, but we've done things that would otherwise be putting them on notice or trying to...
It's because we become an addict.
We are.
We're addicted to China.
We're addicted to cheap money and cheap products.
So Trump says, okay, if you're an addict, you got to do something very strong. You can't just play the game and say, well, we'll get over it. Well, we'll work through it. No, he says, look, it's gone on so long. We are total addicts, and this is what's got to happen. Isn't that really what he's doing?
Pretty much. He's pretty much trying to do the waiting game. But again, let's go back to one fundamental flaw that the tariffs have to recognize. There is a flaw.
Okay.
The dependency that China has on the U.S. is at the lowest level in history.
I would say that's true.
Some people say because they've learned to do a workaround. Anybody will understand that. So hear me out on this. Number one, China has now enough partners, members in the BRICS, and enough customers, countries that are utilizing their manufacturing. But here's something else that China has. They're also a net manufacturer of things that are much more competitively priced. They learned how to make a better iPhone. They learned how to make a better electric vehicle. They learned how to make a better commercial aircraft or a train, a diesel train locomotive. They learned it by stealing the very best of the best from American companies. Here's how they did it. Two ways. One, they went directly and stole it through hacking, which all we all know. Two, when you go over there to manufacture or to sell a product, whether it's a chip, whether it's a Tesla, whether it's a plane, it doesn't matter. They reverse engineer it. See, what they did in Iran was when drones are knocked out in what they call them, the kill drones, are knocked out of the sky, they reverse engineer those, and both Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran get those things that are United States made. They reverse engineer them. See, the fatal flaw in the tariffs is it's not a fatal flaw for long term, but it's one that Trump, I know, has to very carefully walk a fine line is. We are so dependent upon them more than they are of us, but they also, their economy has made things that we basically allow them to make without putting safeguards. And we did the best we could because China has certain rules that we either apply and adhere to, or you can't sell them to their ecosystem because they're 1.5 billion people. That's a lot of consumers.
Right.
That's a lot of money. But because we were so engaged in wanting and drunk on cheap things, we negated to put in safety measures that would ensure that the commercial viability of the proprietary product that we are building over there, many of those things had proprietary engineering, we allowed those communist, I don't even want to say it's Xi Jinping, because it goes far back, it's way earlier than that.
Right.
It's not just in recent years. It's decades back, we allowed the premiers or the leaders of China to be able to integrate all of our information, all of our intellectual property, all of our senior level engineering to their own benefit, so they can literally kick out our companies. They're making it now, and they're selling direct to consumer in their own country, thus keeping the money in there instead of having some of it being sent back out to the United States. So the tariffs have to be careful, because if you want to get real aggressive with China, and they still need us, I'm not saying they don't, but they need us a lot less today than they did 10 years ago, and we need them more today than we did 30 years ago. So they flipped the table.
Right.
So when you're walking the tariff line, you got to be so careful that you don't adversely take some things that we need, like pharmaceuticals. We need those desperately.
Okay? Right.
We need pharmaceuticals. And at the same time, China needs certain things from us. So who's going to give up first something? That's the mediation that's coming ahead.
That's exactly right. And the same is true with regard to other countries, except that the power structures are much different, and the economic comparisons are much less severe. They're willing to work. What did you make of the Trump pausing the tariffs for a short period of time when the American stock market reacted severely?
Well, it was a good move, but he had no choice. It wasn't the equity stock market that he was worried about. The bonds rates on several of the Treasury notes, the 3, the 5, the 10, the 20, the 30, they had started to spike. They went up. The bonds were crashing because governments, including Japan and China, were dumping to offset some of the things that obviously they were needing financially, whether it was their own currency intervention or if it was economic. They were raising capital by selling the treasuries. So there was a Tuesday night when that happened. On that Wednesday, about a month ago or thereabouts, Trump had to relax the tariffs in Europe immediately to bring stability to the treasury market. This is all fact.
All right, so he wasn't giving up. He was just saying, okay, no. I put the pressure on. Now I'm going to ease the pressure for a bit so we can equilibrate the system and get back to the negotiation.
100%. Think about it like this. It's inertia. When you're racing a car, you're going to slam the brakes on. But first, before you can slam the brakes on, you have to do what? Accelerate. So we had to accelerate the tariffs to bring people to a shock factor. Shock them so much that they're saying, oh, my gosh, let's get to the table fast. Then once they're at the table, which they all, within 24 to 48 hours, he had every world leader saying, with the exception of China, let's talk. So that was good. So then he slammed the brakes on, it did a little deceleration, but there was a little bit of inertia, so there was still a little bit of pain, but it was mitigated within days. The stock market stabilized.
Right.
Here we are now today, we're back up to where we were. So he had to do shock value in order to get the attention of the leaders, and then three, which is kind of coming full circle now. So if one, he put the tariffs on, took the tariffs off, now the third thing is get China to the table.
Well, we've laid out, I think, a pretty accurate and oversight here concerning this issue. And it is interesting that Trump has not put sanctions on Russia. However, what has happened, I mean, has not put tariffs on Russia, but there have been sanctions, and the net result of that was that it drove Russia into other markets so that, in effect, while Russian oil and gas was not being distributed to the West in the same way, you would think that would have crushed them. No, what it did, it motivated them into another market so that actually China has become one of their premier markets, as well as India. And so we don't understand the response, how things really work out there, do we?
No, we don't. We don't understand all of it completely. So because we don't understand it completely, there's still a little room for learning. There's always going to be dialogue that we learn things from.
Right.
But remember, it goes back to the same thing. China and the partner countries that it considers to be members, partners, customers, friends, relations of any kind, have made monumental growth in the last 7-8 years. Think mm-hmm. about this. Think about how far our economy has come in 8 years.
Right.
How far our debt has come in 8 years, our deficit spending.
Yeah, okay? Really.
China has never been in a war, with the exception of in the 30s when Japan invaded part of
right.
their Shanghai and Chongqing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, they've used all of their resources to build infrastructure, replicate high-level product manufacturing that they stole from us.
And military.
And partner with 100%
yeah,
in military.
Exactly.
Their new wing jet is a three-engine wing jet, is the most advanced jet ever created in the history of the world.
Well,
and
I'll tell you.
Because they stole it. But
Christian, we could go on and on here, and unfortunately, we have run out of time. There's a sense in which the world has run out of time, too. And Trump kind of understands the desperate nature of the economic situation with regard to the United States, that something has to be done. He's put the pressure on. He's put the pressure on nations in order to get control in the United States of production and so on, so that we can become a producing nation instead of just receiving. And all of this is the process of accomplish that, and it's going to take a number of years to accomplish. But somebody had to get the nations to cry uncle and twist their arm to get us to realize how desperate the situation was, and that's really the effect of the tariffs, I think. No pain, no gain. Do you agree?
100%.
Well, that's a good way to wrap up here. And I'm so grateful that you joined us here. I think a great conversation. Love to have you on anytime. Here's his website, friends. Christian Briggs' website. BMCHAM.com. And you're going to find all kinds of things that he does, has to offer there. And I urge you to go there. I'm certainly going to go there. And see what Christian Briggs really is all about. But I think you can see he has tremendous insight, tremendous wisdom, and he's willing to speak the truth. And that accounts for a lot. Thanks for joining us, Christian. And again, friends, become a partner. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries. You know that we do not have commercial support for this program because it ends up making you have to conform to the will of commerce. That's not what we're about. So become a partner with us. Ask the Lord what he would have you to give, and be about doing it right away. Don't be a manana person. Do it today. God bless, be a blessing, and pray for our country and for our president who's trying to step out and do something positive.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.